altie.com.
Today's Altie interview is about our celebrations of the International Women's Day in 2022. It is a great pleasure to present Christina Touzenis to you, dear listeners. Christina is a lawyer and a recognized leader in international human rights standards and principles in complex settings worldwide. Today, she is a consultant of the social side of sustainability. Hello, Christina. Thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. Doing very well, thank you. I'm not entirely sure who has recognized me as a leader, but I'm very happy if somebody did.
Hopefully, we can make sure with this interview.
Yes.
Let's come to the first question, please. As a lawyer, you have actively campaigned for human rights and thus as well for the protection of humanity and human dignity. How did that come about and what were your experiences?
Oh, I think you'll make me sound way too good. Well, yes, how did that come about? So I always, ever since I was rather small, was somehow vaguely aware of the fact that I was pretty privileged simply by when I was born. I mean, basically, you know, I grew up with a single mom, but we had a house and we had a roof over our head. We had food on the table. And even if you couldn't always pay the bills, I mean, we somehow managed. And that in itself really is being privileged. And I always loved arguing. So what better thing to study than the law? And I guess that the two combined led me to international law, and also because I knew I wanted to travel the world and to not only be stuck in one jurisdiction, in which you are if you practice like national law. So for me, the combination just became international public law and focusing on international human rights. And that then led me to very many super exciting things, including being head of international migration law in the International Organization for Migration for 10 years, working in the Mediterranean region on protection of children's rights before that, and now working, as you said, as a consultant on social sustainability, doing super fascinating work with the private sector, but also with some UN agencies such as UNICEF on investor engagement on children's rights. So it's really, I mean, it's an incredibly rewarding field to be in.
So this interview is part of a series of posts on the International Women's Day. Why are you personally celebrating this day and how important is it to you?
I think I'm not personally actually celebrating it. I, again, probably realize that I am pretty privileged. I think the International Women's Day is still extremely important, not so much for women like me who've had opportunities thrown at them, basically, but it is terribly important around the world where women still face discrimination, where there are, I mean, you can just see what has just happened in these recent months in Afghanistan with a regime taking over, which is definitely not pro women's rights, but also in the smaller things that happen around the world where you can see that women are being attacked in not necessarily very overt ways, but for instance, you can see what happens in countries where regimes are not necessarily pro-human rights. Very often minorities, migrants, non-nationals, and then women, and then the judiciary, and then, you know, slowly it's a slippery slope. So I think it's always very important to stand up for the rights of people who have traditionally been discriminated, who still face discrimination. And it doesn't really matter whether or not it's women or somebody else. It is no matter who faces discrimination or mistreatment, it's important to fight for those rights.
Well, equality and diversity rarely happens overnight and by itself. We often tend to intervene to regulate things. What do you think about quota systems?
Well, first of all, I think that regulation is much more than quota systems. I think in the global north, perhaps we've seen a lot of focus on quotas. As such, I can't say that I'm for or against. I think it needs to be put into a much bigger context. You can't meaningfully promote women's rights if you only look at quotas in, for instance, the boardroom. It's definitely true that we need to have diversity, and that does not only mean women in the boardroom. It means where do people come from? What is their experience? Because if you have a woman who is born super rich with access to the best possible schools, with access more or less to the boys' club, her experience is not going to be terribly different or diverse from the guys who sit in the same boardroom. It's more about going before that and say, okay, so what are the blockages and what are the bottlenecks or the glass ceilings that women who did not have those possibilities have to be promoted within companies to actually raise through the ranks and look more at discrimination even before that. And also look at access to education around the world. Women might never even get to a quota system because they don't have access to adequate education to get there. So I think it's looking before that and looking at regulations in a much broader sense. And there is, from basic human rights, you know, there is the prohibition of discrimination on a variety of reasons, including gender and gender identity. And that goes through all aspects of life. It's no discrimination in access to healthcare, no discrimination in access to employment. And there are things that companies can definitely do from one day to another, such as ensuring equal pay for equal jobs. But there are also things that need to be looked at in a much broader context in terms of access to education, access to maternal leave, access to parental leave, so that men will also get leave when they have a baby, because that will probably make a lot of fathers very happy, but it will also equal the playing field, because then when you look at a man, basically at any age, because you guys can father children up until a rather old age, whereas we have a biological clock ticking, right? But saying, oh, it's not only the girls who's going to go on maternity leave and, oh, be away for the next 4 months and, oh, what are we going to do? But it will actually be the possibility anybody would have to go on parental leave. And that, I think, is making it more of a level playing field. So that's just one example. I think it really is about making the playing fields more level.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Well, actually, where do you see the difference when it comes to inclusion and participation between people from, let's say, the richer countries, we already touched that, and the developing countries, especially if we look into refugee situations as well?
Well, there are just so many different obstacles. Those of us who have been raised, born and raised in the global north, sometimes forget all the privileges that we have. And privilege really is having less obstacle to face and less obstacle to climb. I had access to free university education, which is the case in most countries in Europe. I'm not saying that it's completely free, but it's something that definitely then opens up a lot of opportunities. It doesn't mean that I got my dream job the moment I got out of university, but it made it possible for me to then develop and have choices. I think it's exactly that. It's the possibility of choices. Respect for human rights basically is about making it possible for people to have more choices in life freely to progress on their own without being hindered either by stronger actors or by the state itself. And there's no doubt that people on the move, people living in abject poverty, people have been forced to flee, and not only forced to flee because of unrest or war or persecution, but also because of simple lack of possibilities, lack of rule of law, lack of security. They face completely different obstacles than those of us who are born in the global north and who are perhaps a little bit used to having our rights respected. And also taking them for granted. If you think about how many people, young people today, actually unionize, very few. And that is because they think that labor rights is something that's granted to them, you know, on almost automatically. It's very much not so. I mean, our grandparents and even our parents fought to have maximum hours of work, minimum living wages. And it's something that can disappear because the individual against the big business has very little power, whereas as a collective we do. And then also fighting, you talk about, you know, people who are fleeing for one reason or another, are also faced with the discourse of an us versus them discourse when they arrive, for instance, in states that could provide protection for them, where people for some reason seem to think that the fact that your rights have not been respected previously, it's almost your fault. It's almost as if you don't deserve them, whereas I have done absolutely nothing to have my rights deserved. I just happened to be born in Europe in a certain period of time where I could take that for granted.
Yeah. I would like to switch now a little bit to your consultancy approach for sustainability.
Yeah.
And probably a little bit an aggressive question right now, it has become incredibly fashionable to shine with sustainability these days. ESG is just so great. In the meantime, however, you've focused on special topics of social sustainability. What is it all about?
So I think you're right. It's become incredibly fashionable, which is good and bad. It's good in the sense that it's a sign, I would say, that even those who don't really care and who are just jumping on the bandwagon because, as you say, it's shiny, it's fashionable, they realize that they can't just disregard it. They might not take it seriously. It might all be one sort of washing or shining or whatever it is. It can be greenwashing, blue washing, pink washing, whatever color we're washing. But there is a tendency that shows that you can't just ignore it anymore. And I think that in 2-3 years, and this might also reply to your question, in 2-3 years, a lot of people who don't really know what it is or who are not taking it seriously are going to be exposed, because there will be much more requirement on real reporting, not only about do you have a statement, but really what did you actually do and show me what you actually did. And self-reporting, I think, will become more and more frowned upon. There's been a lot of focus on the environmental side, which is good in the sense that we clearly need to save the planet. I personally have no clue about how to do that, technically speaking. Also, there's been a lot of focus on the environment because a lot of new regulations have come out on the environmental side. Because before, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, nobody gave a hoot about the environment. And it was all, sooner or later, we're going to have a climate crisis. Well, now it's here, so now we need to do something about it. The social and good governance, I've never really understood how good governance could be considered an externality, but well, I mean, what have you, is coming out now. I think it was also spurred on by the COVID crisis or the COVID period of time we lived in. But what I see is that companies are nominating ESG heads or ESG experts left, right, and center, with people who have no expertise in sustainability, to be quite frank. And also that there seem to be a lot of vacancies out there looking for the ESG expert, which is utter nonsense, because you cannot be an expert on environmental issues. You can't even, I would say, be an expert on all the various environmental issues, as well as on social issues, which goes from protecting labor rights, protecting children's rights, to having stakeholder engagement processes, to setting numerical indicators for social impact, to looking at what good governance looks like. And you can't have that in one person. It's a number of people that you need to consult. And I think that's really dangerous, that people seem to think that this can be lodged in one person. It's much more, I would think it would be much more necessary to have a variety of voices that you then weigh when you make an investment, for instance. And sometimes simply the return on investment is going to be the thing that weighs most. And that's okay. But at least listen then to the other voice and say, okay, so this is the choice we make. And stop thinking that an ESG expert is one person who has to have financial background. No, absolutely not. because financial people do not have that sustainability background in most cases. It's very rare to find somebody who has both. And I think it's much more important to listen to various experts and gather all the information you can. We'll get there.
Good. We are already coming to the last question, Christina. And I would be really interested to know, what is your message to people who are in the process of making the transition from education to work? In particular, of course, to the many international women who are listening to us right now.
I think it's all about following your values. And as women, but I mean, I would say anybody, but since we are targeting women here, I think it's about knowing your worth, but also showing what you're worth. I've had a number of young women coming to me and say, I can do this. I'm like, okay, show it to me. But don't let anybody tell you that you can't do something, but also just don't shout that you have all of these talents. I mean, we want to see it. Luck is a big component in getting where you want, but luck is not going to come find you if you just sit at home and wait for it. And you are not going to land your dream job the first day you get out of university. If you do, please tell me how, because that would be a really valuable advice, I think. Be grateful for the people who lift you up, but don't ever let anybody tell you that they made you. You made yourself.
That was Christina Tuzenes, a lawyer by education, a human rights lawyer by profession, and a consultant in social sustainability questions by heart. Thank you for this wonderful interview.
Thank you so much for having me.
LTE.com, the online portal for institutional investors in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. LTE.com.